नमोम विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय तुले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। So thank you all very much for joining today's session. So we have been discussing from the second chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. I'll do a quick recap. We have been discussing this theme of the knowledge of the soul. So I'll do a quick recap of what we have seen. So Krishna says, अशोच्यान्वशोचस्त्वं प्रज्ञावादांश्च भाषसे गतासन अगतासंश्च नानुशोचन्ति पंडिता। माय डियर अर्जुन, यू आर स्पीकिंग लाइक अ वेरी लर्नड पर्सन बट यू डोंट नो व्हाट रियल नॉलेज, बिकॉज लर्नड पीपल डू नॉट लैमेंट फॉर द डिस्ट्रक्शन ऑफ द ग्रास बॉडी, बिकॉज ग्रास बॉडी एनीवे गेट्स डिस्ट्रॉयड एट ऑल टाइम, एंड दे डू नॉट लैमेंट फॉर द डिस्ट्रक्शन ऑफ द सटल बॉडी, बिकॉज डिस्ट्रक्शन ऑफ द सटल बॉडी मीन्स लिबरेशन। And they do not lament for the destruction of the soul, because soul can never be destroyed. Okay. So then Krishna says that natvevaham jatasham natvam neme janadipa nachaivana bhavishyamah sarvevayam ataparam. My dear Arjuna, in a relationship with a person, is your source of joy the body or the soul? Is this, if you say that the source of joy, the soul, then the soul cannot be the source of lamentation, because there is, the soul is eternal. There was never a time when I did not exist. There was never a time when you did not exist. There would never be a time when any of us would ever cease to exist. The soul is eternal. So if you say that in a relationship with a person, if the object of joy is the soul, then that soul cannot be the object of lamentation, because it does not die anyway. And if you say the object of joy is the body, then again, if you are connected to the body, if the body, even when the person is living, you should not be lamenting, because the body keeps changing, right? If you say that I really loved my son when he had a very infant body, that infant body is long dead. Then it became a small a boy body, and then that died, then it became a youthful body, that youthful body died, then it became a middle-aged body. So for none of these changes you ever lamented. So why are you lamenting now? When it is going to change from one body to another body, it's anyway changed from one body to another body so many times when that person was alive also. So this is what he said, Dehinosminyata dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tata dehan praptir dhirastatrana muhyati, right? Then Arjuna may say, look, I understand point. I understand that the body does not, body is always subject to destruction, and the soul is always eternal. I understand this point. I am not debating it. When the soul moves from one gross body to another gross body at the time of death, and what we call as death, at that time, I will no longer get the association of Bhishma and Drona and all these great personalities from whom I have always received so much love and affection. I will not get their association. So Krishna says, now you have a valid point, but what to do? That is the nature of material world. You will have to learn to tolerate it. You can't fight inevitable things, right? Matras parshastu kaunteya toshna shukadukkada ஆகமா ஆபாயினோ அனித்யாக ஸ்தாம் திதிக்ஷஸ்வ பாரத. That is the nature of material emotions, nature of material circumstances. They will come, they will go. Whether they are good things or bad things in this world, even if you want good things to stay, they cannot stay. Or if you want bad things to stay also, they cannot stay. They will go away. So, therefore, that is the nature of the material world. Understanding the nature of this material world, you should not be lamenting. Learn to tolerate. That's what he said here. Then, in the next verse, he says, Yamhina vyatayantete purusham purusharushabha samadukka sukam deep somritatvaya kalpate. He says that intelligent person is equal in happiness and distress. So what is the, he says, what is the, what does one gain by learning to tolerate? If one learns to tolerate this sukha-dukha, what does he get in return? He says liberation. He becomes qualified for liberation. So you should definitely consider giving up the end of lamentation. Try to be equipoised. Nasato vidyate bhavo nabhavo vidyate sataha ubayor api drishtavanta svanayos tatva darshibhi. He says, so therefore understand, my dear Arjuna, that there is no permanent existence for the body, and for the soul there is no cessation of existence at any time. So therefore understand this and don't lament. Avinashita tadviddhi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyayasyasya na kaschit kartum arhati. For the soul, which pervades the whole body, it's indestructible. No one can destroy it. No one destroy that which is indestructible. And then he says, antamanta ime deha nityasyukta sharirina anashino aprameyasya tadma tasmad yudhyasva bharata. Same point, he says that the bodies belonging to the eternal soul are said to be temporary. Therefore, you should fight. The body is temporary. Whether you kill or not, the bodies cannot eternally stay anyway. So, why do you want to not perform your duty for trying to protect the fallible body, which is anyway going to fall apart? Yayenam vetti hantaram yaschayenam manyate hatam ubautavna vijanito nayam hanti na hanyate. So, understand Arjuna that the soul can never kill anyone. The soul cannot be killed also. Okay. So, one who thinks that the soul can kill or be killed is not intelligent. Okay. So, then finally the last verse that we saw. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavitavana bhoyah ajo nityah ashvatah ayam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul is never born, nor does it ever die. Neither was it born in the past. It's not like in the olden days the soul used to take birth, but now of late, you know, souls have ceased to take birth. It's not like that. Past also, the souls never used to take birth, and in the future also they will never take birth or they will never die. And there is no destruction in the past, present or future, and is therefore eternal. Even though being eternal, the soul does not age. It cannot kill, and it cannot be killed also. It cannot kill anyone, and it cannot be killed by anyone also, like that. So this is where we ended our discussion last week. I'm sorry, last week I was a little bit not physically doing good, so we had to cancel it last week. But this is where we ended the week. Any quick comments, discussion points before we move on to today's section? Okay, so if there isn't, then I think we'll continue our discussion. So Krishna continues. Just one second. Okay. वेदाविनाशिनं नित्यं ययेनं अजमव्ययं कथं सपुरुषपार्थ कं घातयति हन्तिकम्. यः वेद दट पर्सन हु नोस कॉन्स्टेंटली नियम एनम दट दिस सोल अविनाशिनम इज इंडिस्ट्रक्टिबल अजम दट इट इज अनबॉर्न अव्ययम एंड दट इट इज एटर्नल हंतिकम किल्स होम कथम एंड हाउ कैन ही किल कम घातयति कथम एंड हुम डस ही कॉज अदर्स टू किल एंड सो द सेम पॉइंट इज रिपीटिंग कृष्णा इज रिपीटिंग जस्ट टू स्लेट अर्जुना टू थिंक अलॉन्ग दीज लाइन्स सो ही सेज ही हू नोज दैट दिस सोल इज इंडिस्ट्रक्टिबल अनबॉर्न एंड एटर्नल Can he kill someone? Or if he can, how will he kill? So he is talking about you will not be held responsible for killing anyone. Okay. And kam ghatayati hantikam. Ghatayati. And I will not be held responsible for inciting you to kill someone. Because the soul cannot incite anyone to kill anyone. Right, so that's what he is telling. So he says, why this knowledge? With this knowledge, neither you who are fighting nor I who am urging you to fight will have any fault. Of course, this has understood in the right way. Even though the soul cannot be killed, but to in an adharmic way, separating the soul from the body is not, we don't have the sanction to do that. We cannot do that. So that is the punishment for that. Okay. This is Prabhupada makes it very clear in the purport, but this does not mean that you can kill anyone and get away. Here, again here Arjuna Krishna is inspiring Arjuna to fight a dharmic lonely. He is not just telling take a sword and when people are sleeping at night you go and chop their throat. He does not say that. He is inspiring Arjuna to fight a dharmic battle. So in fighting a dharmic battle you will certainly not incur any papa, and in reality you are not killing also. You cannot kill the soul. So from that point of view, it has to be understood. It's not that this is recommending that you go and kill anyone, because anyway the soul cannot be killed. Like that, he is not recommending. Like here, nityam is used as an adverb. He who knows constantly that the soul is indestructible, unborn, or not. So constant knowledge is called as realization. So when one attains the stage of realization, that knowledge is never lost. That is why you cannot get realizations before one reaches the stage of nishtha. Because that is why in that verse satam prasangat mama virya samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata tad joshanadashu apavarga vartmani shraddha ratir bhakti ranukramishyati. So in that verse Shri Vishnu Chakradhakur writes satam prasangat mama virya samvido. Mama virya samvido means you can realize my pastimes, he says. And Sri Lakshmana Chakradhakur says, realization of these kind of pastimes happens at the stage of nishtha. right? So that is the meaning of constant knowledge. Constant knowledge means you are able to constantly apply that knowledge. That realization, that is realization. So before Nishtha, it is not very easy to have realization because we may not have the ability to constantly apply it. It may be there, it may not be there. So we may not have realized that we are not this body, we are the soul. The knowledge is there. We all know this knowledge, right? But realization will take its own time. That is what this verse talks about, that Veda Avinashinam Nityam. When one constantly knows that the soul is indestructible, which means one is constantly able to act on that platform. So that realization is called as Nityam Veda. He constantly knows. Like that. So he says the words describing the soul are used to negate the objections of Arjuna about destruction. He's telling destroyed, destroyed, destroyed. He said nothing gets destroyed, don't worry. You know, you just fight. That's what he's indicating here. Okay. So he says, whom do I, the Lord, cause to be killed by advising you to fight? So can I cause you to kill someone? I cannot, because no one gets killed, right? And how do I cause anyone to be killed? And whom do you kill? And how will you kill? How will you kill? How are you going to kill? That's what he's indicating. Whom will you kill? How will you kill? Whom can I cause you to kill? And how am I going to cause you to kill that person? Like that. Any quick discussion points, comments here? Anyone would like to share anything? Okay. If there is nothing, then we'll continue. So he knows Krishna. Vasamsi jirnani yata vihaya. Navani grinnati naroparani. Tashirani vihaya jirnani. Anyani sanyati navani dehi. Says yata naraha. Just as a man. Jirnani vasamsi vihaya. Jirnani means old and worn out. Vasamsi is clothes. Vihaya means to give up. Right? Yatanaraha, just as a man, vihaya, he gives up jirnani vasamsi, old clothes. And aparani navani grinnati. And accepts other new clothes. He accepts other new clothes. Aparani grinnati aparani navani. He accepts new ones. Tata dehi, in the same way that jiva, jirnani sharirani vihaya, after giving up old bodies, anyani navani sinyati, he attains new ones. So this is what he says. So this is just like, you know, when someone gives up old worn out clothes and accepts new clothes. In the same way, the jiva gives up old, worn-out bodies and accepts new bodies. So there is no need to lament for that. So here, Arjuna may say, oh, but by my fighting, a jiva will give up the body known as Bhishma. Then you and I will be the cause of that. So if I kill Bhishma, then I will become the cause of the jiva giving up that body known as Bhishma, and you will be the cause of inciting me to do that. So Krishna says, look, what fault is there in a person giving up old worn cloth to put on a new cloth? Is there something wrong? In a similar way, Bhishma will give up an old body and attain a new divine body. What fault is there for me or you in that? Okay. the argument. Any quick discussion points, comments? Okay. Then he continues. Okay, there is something in the chat box. So there is a question here. There were young soldiers in the battle as well. They did not have old bodies. So how then this verse? Yes, this is a valid point. That is why, you know, it is not that one argument applies for everyone. Here the main concern for Arjuna was Bhishma and Drona, who were both old. But even for the younger ones, you know, that body is anyway perishable in one sense. And he will give multiple arguments. It's not that this is the only argument. You know, the book of Bhagavad Gita does not stand on one point. That's not the whole philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. There are multiple aspects, you know, which will be okay, there is another point in the question. We can provide new clothes to the person, but cannot provide new body. So how does it apply universally? See, that's why you don't have to provide new bodies. You are not expected to provide new bodies. The law of nature will provide new bodies to that person. So if it is your duty, if it is your dharma to actually to fight that battlefield and take that person's life away, then you can do. Otherwise, this is not sanctioning you go take a knife and stab anyone, because anyway the soul cannot be killed. That is not the point, actually. Okay. Sachi Prantu.
Haribol Prabhuji, Dandat Pranam.
Dandat Prabhu.
Prabhuji, when someone get killed, he is in a human body as of now.
Uh-huh.
What is the guarantee that he will get a body which is suitable for his spiritual advancement in the next life?
That depends on his karma.
We are killing that before he spiritualizes his body, no? In one sense.
If you are in a dharmic battle and if he is fighting a dharmic battle, here that is the circumstance. We are not talking about any other killing. If you are fighting a dharmic battle and he is fighting a dharmic battle, if he dies in a dharmic battle, then he will at least atova prapsasi swargam, at least he will get a swargic body. That is guaranteed. But then, so this is not like non-shand kind of murder. Here, the situation is Arjuna is fighting on a dharmic battlefield. So that is the situation. So all these arguments can be withstand. Otherwise, not.
But it is very difficult to, you know, to digest also. Mm-hmm. You know, it is so, it looks very, you know, the Krishna's point is looks very so easy that, oh, there is a very deeper attachment with the present thing. So it's very difficult to, you know, think in that, oh, he's getting a new body, that's why we should be celebrating that he's getting the new one, rather than how we will be happy with giving up old clothes. That is not the same scenario happens with the old body. The justification is given, the comparison is given with the body with the old clothes. Mm-hmm. But it is not the same thing, because when you get throw out the old clothes, we get a new mm-hmm. clothes and we are very happy.
Yeah, because really, here you don't see that person getting the new body. Because, but that is why not everything can be understood by Pratyaksha Praman. That's why you need Shabda Praman as well. So, if everything was supposed to be understood by Pratyaksha Praman only, then we don't need Bhagavad Gita only. Why should we come together and discuss Bhagavad Gita? everything would be so evident just by seeing and hearing and experiencing this of touch and everything. Pratyaksha Praman would be sufficient. But it's not like that. Transmigration is not, you know, you cannot understand it purely by Pratyaksha Praman. It's not possible. Mm. Except for some very except for some cases like where you have like past life memories and things like that. Otherwise, it's impossible to actually see transmigration. It's not very difficult, not possible. Mm.
So, Proji, when a deep attachment is there on the body, it is very difficult, you know, to even think that old person is getting now, he will get a new body. But the attachment is so deep on the present body, it's very difficult to, you know, even think that, let this present body, it doesn't exist and we'll get a new body, yeah. You know.
Correct. I mean, if... if the attachment is strong, it's built to understand. But what to do then? We have to use the sword of knowledge to cut that attachment. So that is why Krishna is giving Arjuna the sword of knowledge so that he can cut his attachment. Because he's showing to Arjuna that your attachment is unreasonable, Arjuna. So the first thing is to understand that he's having an unreasonable attachment, even though it is there. But you have to tell it in a way that the other person understands. And it may be gradual, but it's okay. But at least you start understanding it. Mm.
Thank you, Pruj.
Right. Anything else anyone would like to share? There is something in the chat box. In today's circumstances, what is a dharmic battle? A soldier fighting at the border, is it considered a dharmic battle? Well, I don't want to sound harsh. In all probability, not. Okay. It is not. But are they fighting according to the Dharma Shastras? Are they following the Dharma Shastras? Is Indian military, is it conducted by people who have read the Dharma Shastras and are people trained according to Dharma Shastras? No. So then you may say, it is very unfair that they have to give up their body also. And at the same time, because they are not fighting a dharmic battle, they may be penalized for what they are doing. Yes, that is a sad fact. And we will also be penalized for whatever we are doing. Or any other person who is not a soldier also, he will also be penalized for what he is doing. So therefore, in today's day and age, is there any dharmic fight? I don't think so. Because I don't think, they are fighting according to the Dharma Shastras. So therefore, a soldier fighting at the bar, we can only pray for him. We cannot sort of say that, it is all very dharmic, he will at least get swarga. That definitely is not a fact. Any else anyone would like to share? There is something here. There exist militant groups who are fighting for something they called establishment expansion of religion. Vaguely dharma. They can think whatever they want. But if they are doing it according to the proper guidance of Dharma Shastras, then we can have a discussion. Otherwise, anyone can fight on whatever things, but whether it is according to the Shastras or not, we do not know. If it is according to the Shastras, then okay. Okay. Anything anyone would like to add? It's a little touchy subject. I thought someone would speak something. Anyway. Okay, we will continue then. नैनं चिन्तन्ति शस्त्राणि नैनं दहति पावकः न चैनं क्लेदयन्त्यापो न शोयति मारुतः न एनं चिन्तन्ति शस्त्राणि वेपन्स् केनाट् कट् द सोल् न एनं दहति पावकः फायर् केनाट् बर्न् इट् न एनं न च एनं क्लेदयन्ति आपः आपः इस् वाटर् Kledayanti means to moisten. Water cannot moisten the soul or wet it, or it cannot drown in water. Na shoshayati marutaha. Shoshayati means to dry. Wind cannot dry it. So what to speak of killing soul, it is not possible to injure the soul also. That's what is being indicated here. One cannot injure the soul also. He says also it is not possible to injure the soul at all by weapons by you in the battle. That is explained in this verse. Weapons such as swords cannot cut it. The fire weapon cannot burn it. The rain weapon cannot wet it, nor can the wind weapon dry it out. Like that. Any quick comments? So basically, he's telling what to speak of killing the soul. Even injuring the soul is not possible by any of your weapons. Like that. Achedyoyam ada. Achedyoyam ahyam akledyo shoshye eva cha nityas sarvagatastanur achaloyam sanatanah avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate tasmadevam viditvenam nanushochitum arhasi 24 or 25 together achedyoyam the soul cannot be cut adahyoyam the soul cannot be burnt akleo ashoshye eva cha it cannot be moistened or dried. Why? So therefore it is ayam sanatanaha nityaha, it is eternal. Sarvagataha, it is traveling in all bodies. Sthanur achalaha, it is very stable. Avyaktoyam, it is imperceptibly small. Avyakta. Achintyoyam, it is inconceivable. Pervading the body inconceivably. How can such a small soul have an effect throughout the body? So it's achintya. How can such an imperceptibly small soul pervade throughout the body? Therefore it's avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate. And it is also without changes. It does not change. Tasmad evam viditvenam, knowing it in this way, na anushochitum arhasi, you should not lament over it. So therefore, understanding soul cannot be cut, burned, moistened or dried, and that it is eternal, it is traveling in all bodies, it is stable, and it is imperceptibly small and also pervading the whole body, and that it does not undergo changes. Understanding it in this way, one should not lament. Okay, there are some questions in the chat box. I will take the question little later. I'll just complete this purport and then we will take the questions. Therefore, the Atma is described in this way, taking the descriptions of the previous verse. The previous verse, it cannot be cut, it cannot be burned, it cannot be dried or moistened. The repetition of the words signifying the eternal nature of the soul in this section, such as the use of the word nitya, sanatanaha in this verse, and then also the statement in the previous verse, is for the purpose of precisely defining the soul for those of confused intellect. So the point is repetition to make the point very, very clear. That's what he's telling. Again and again, why is the soul called nitya, then sanatana, and and so many times why is it repeated? In order to make the point perfectly clear. In order to make the point perfectly clear, that's why it is repeated. Just as one will repeat several times in order to make certain that everyone understands. This is the dharma of Kali Yuga. This is the dharma of Kali Yuga. Kalau nasteva 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 gatiranyata. Harer nama harer nama harer nama eva kevalam. Right? So therefore, repetition is to make it very clear that people can understand. Sarvagataha. Sarvagataha, gone everywhere, means that the soul goes into all sorts of bodies such as human body, animal body, devata body, karma. That is the meaning of Sarvagataha. It is not that one soul, like the Paramatma, is simultaneously present everywhere. It means one soul has the potential at different points of time to inhabit different types of bodies. That's what it means. So, the Paramatma is Sarvagataha in the sense that at the same point, the Paramatma can be everywhere. The Jivatma is also Sarvagataha in the sense that it has the potential to inhabit all kinds of bodies, but at different points of time, not at the same time. Except for some empowered souls who can simultaneously exist in two or three places, or at the most 9 places, 10 places, like that, by their mystic siddhis. That is possible. But it is not possible for ordinary living entities to be simultaneously all pervading at all places. That is not possible. That is only Paramatma is possible for that. But ordinary living entity have the potential to accept bodies at in different species at different places at different times, but not at the same time. Okay, then sthanu and achala have the same meaning, which means having stability, and the repetition makes it very clear. Okay, because it is very fine, it is called as avyakta. Because keshagra shatabhagasya shatada kalpita pare, how it is mentioned that the size of the soul, 1/10,000th tip of the hair, like that. Because it pervades the body with consciousness, it is called achintya, beyond consumption. How can such an insignificantly small soul have its influence over the whole body? This is achintya, very inconceivable, like that. So in this way, till the 25th verse, he has presented the proper understanding of the soul and the body. And he has given various reasons. Arjuna should not lament. Understanding the nature of the soul and body, Arjuna has absolutely no reason to lament for fighting this dharmic battle and killing also. That's what he says. Any comments, discussion points? I know there are some questions in the chat box, but before that, if anyone would like to raise their hands and speak out, I can take. Yes, Sachi Paranto.
Prabhuji, Dandapanam.
Yes,
Prabhuji, the knowledge that you had last time when you told that we are getting the knowledge about, and with the knowledge weapon, we can cut the ignorance. Huh? But after knowing about the soul and all the description, the philosophy that soul cannot be cut or soul cannot be destroyed, anything, all this knowledge is there. Uh-huh. But still, after getting this knowledge also, why our ignorance is not getting, we are still misidentifying ourselves with the body. Why we don't have that, fearlessness that, nothing is going to happen. Misidentification is still there. Why the knowledge is not sufficient to remove that misidentification?
Okay, bro. I will give you an example. If, let's say, have you ever had an experience of writing on a whiteboard with the word marker? You have had this experience, right?
Yes, Pooji.
What happens if you write it and leave it for 1 or 2 months and then try to wipe it?
It still remains, actually.
It you can't wipe it, actually, because that it gets dry and it does not go away. So then you have to use either spirit or soap and water and then really wipe it off. So similarly, our experience in this material world is so deep rooted that knowledge, it's just like, you know, Indra had the thunderbolt, but still it took him more than a year to cut the throat of Vritrasura, right? If he had the thunderbolt, why couldn't he immediately cut? Because it was so hard, right? So similarly, our conditionings are also so hard. Since time immemorial, we have been identifying with the body. So just by knowing that we are not this body, that inertia will, the inertia of our conditioning will not go away. Just like if you get off a running train, you can't immediately stop. You will be running in the direction of the train for a while before it stops. So similarly, we have the inertia of our conditioning also, where we, since time immemorial, we have been identifying with the body. So even though we know, now we have the knowledge, but we have to start acting on that knowledge and start having some realizations, then slowly, you know, you reverse the inertia and you can start a new inertia going. But it takes time. It's not easy.
Yeah, so Proje, when I gone through the book, which is recently written by Harishori Prabhu about the last pastimes of Srila Prabhupada and, you know, transcendental pastimes. So, so still when we give up the body, that time there are a lot of emotional turmoils in the person's heart.
Yeah.
At the stage, even a person like, you know, such a spiritually advanced also. So that's why there's a question mark that when the time when we start identifying that, yes, Krishna is our proprietor and we are, you know, more and more connected to Krishna, then our bodily consciousness will start slowly, you know, moving towards spiritual consciousness.
Like, yeah. See, that's why. See, body will remain body only. The body will act as body only. But our consciousness will change. This thing about what Prabhupada went through can be understood at multiple levels. On one level, Bhagavad Gita second chapter discussion level, you can understand that the nature of the body will remain the same, but a realized person is not affected. He is still able to dictate the Bhaktivedanta purports in the last days of his life. You know, his consciousness was very clear. Right? This is one understanding. So even though the body will show its nature, antavanta ime deha, this is one level of understanding. But another level of understanding is, the Jiva Goswami says in Bhakti Sandarbha, he says that such a person's body as being giving trouble and all that, and decaying and growing, it's all an external show for, it's all an illusion, actually. Because Prabhupada's body is actually spiritual. Even Krishna, where he created an illusion of giving up his body. Right? Even Krishna, even though his body is completely spiritual and he goes back in the same body, self-same body, but he also creates an illusion of giving up his body when he is in the material world to bewilder such people. So he says that the perfected devotee's body is also completely spiritual. So when, and they go back in that body only, but they also create an illusion of giving up that body. Right? So a materialistic person sees that his body is also material. A practicing sadhaka at least theoretically understands that this body that he is leaving behind is for me to worship. But in reality, his body is not material, it is spiritual. And a spiritually perfected person can actually see it and feel it.
But when we try to preach others, it's very difficult to, you know, give this kind of concepts to.
You should not. That is why we have to, because if we prematurely give out these concepts to people who do not have that faith, then it will become the ninth offense to instruct a faithless person about the glories of the Holy Name. So you should you should know what their level is, what they can digest without committing offenses. Only that much knowledge should be given. That is why when it comes to preaching, you should always know your audience, and there should not be multiple levels of their advancement. So then you will always end up speaking something which may be difficult to digest for them, and you may end up committing the ninth offense. So when it comes to teaching or preaching, you should always have same level audience so that you can give the same level of knowledge which they can digest as much as possible. But if there is a wide variety, very distinctly different levels of advancement, then it becomes very difficult. How would you avoid committing the ninth offense? It becomes difficult.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Anything else anyone would like to share? Add? Yes, Sonar Sakhi Mataji.
Prabhuji, this must be different than tolerating the pain, no? It's like when one is not bodily conscious.
Which must be different, Mataji?
Means when a person is in the consciousness is elevated, that is not tolerating the pleasure,
because like he is not at that level. He is actually in a communion with Krishna. So his lamentation may actually be his feeling of separation. We may think that his body is giving pain, so that's why he must be lamenting. But that is our pratyaksha based anuman. But in reality, he may be feeling the ecstasy of separation from Krishna, which may seem like lamentation from an ordinary point of view, but in reality it may not be.
Yes, because when Karna he tolerated the pain, Parshuramji he could understand. Means I just got connected this with that event, that he could understand that he's a Kshatriya and not a Brahmin. That means that is tolerance. He was judging was the tolerance. That means when we are having that pain or pleasure, that means that is till Brahmana level, right? And
tolerance.
Means what I mean to say is, means like tolerating these pain pleasures is a different level, and not going
not experiencing above, it only. Transcending it.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, anything else? Okay, if there is nothing, then I will take some in the chat box. There are a few things in the chat box. Does it work the same for Lord Krishna when he expands himself into multiple individual personalities? Okay, his expansion is slightly different. it is not the same, because he can unlimitedly expand. In fact, all the living entities are actually his expansions only. Mamaiva Amsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Like that. Another question. How does the soul become a slave of this body because we are forced to labor for fulfilling its endless desires? And how do we come out of this slavery? Well, Atmamaya Mrite Rajan Parasyanubhavatmanah Na Gateta Artha Sambandah Swapna Drashtar Manjasa. So this is what Shukadeva Goswami is indicating to Parikshit Maharaj, that the living entity actually has this apparent slavery of the soul towards the body is an imagination that is created by the avidya potency of maya. Avidya potency creates this illusion. And he thinks that he is enslaved by this body. But in reality, it is just an illusion. When the person wakes up from this illusion, then he will realize that I have nothing with this body. So how did this get created? This gets created when the living entity chooses to turn his face away from Krishna. And when he wants to enjoy separately from Krishna, then the maya potency, the avaranatmika shakti of maya potency covers his identification with the soul, and the prakshepatmika shakti creates an alternative identity for him, and then he starts identifying with that, and then he falls under the illusion of being enslaved by that body. So how can one escape this? The answer for that is when we again become Krishnonmukh, when we start turning our face towards Krishna by accepting the path of devotional service, then it is possible. That is the way. Okay. So, also, is reincarnation and transmigration the same or different, because we use these two terms interchangeably? Yeah, they are same only in one sense. Yeah. Reincarnation, transmigration, same thing. Yeah. Okay, anything else? Okay. So now he has presented the the right understanding of the body and soul, the right philosophy. Now, but the right philosophies are not always the only philosophies which are existing. There are many faulty philosophies also, which were popular. There is no new age deviant philosophy. So deviant philosophies have always been there. You know, just the external form may slightly be different, but deviant philosophies have always been there. Buddhist philosophy, Jain philosophy, the Charvak philosophy, all these things have always been there, right? So now Krishna is telling that, look, now I have told you proper Vedic philosophy about the nature of body and soul, and I have established to you that there is no need for you to lament. But if you say that you will not accept Vedic philosophy, you will accept only some deviant philosophy, then I will establish to you based on how, by accepting this deviant philosophies also, you don't really have to lament. You have no reason to lament. Okay. So now, starting from 26th verse till the 30th verse, in these next five verses, Krishna is going to present, oh, even if you believe in this philosophy, still you should not be lamenting. Oh, or even if you believe in this philosophy, still you should not be lamenting. Like that, he's going to present various different philosophies now. Okay. Let's see. So he says, అత చైనం నిత్యజాతం నిత్యం వా మన్యసే మృతం తథాపి త్వం మహాబాహో నైనం శోచితుమర్హసి. సో హీ సేస్ అత చ మన్యసే, అత చ మీన్స్ ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్, మన్యసే మీన్స్ ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ యు థింక్, ఈవెన్ ఇఫ్ యు థింక్ ఏనం దట్ దిస్ సోల్ నిత్య జాతం ఇస్ కంటిన్యువలీ బాండ్, నిత్యం మృతం అండ్ ఇట్ కంటిన్యూస్లీ డైస్, ఇట్ టేక్స్ బర్త్ విత్ ద బాడీ అండ్ డైస్ విత్ ద బాడీ. సో వెన్ ఎవర్ ద బాడీ ఈస్ బాండ్ అలాంగ్ విత్ ద బాడీ ద సోల్ ఇస్ ఆల్సో బాండ్, అండ్ వెన్ ఎవర్ ద బాడీ డైస్ అలాంగ్ విత్ ద బాడీ ద సోల్ ఆల్సో డైస్. అత చ మన్యసే, ఇఫ్ దిస్ ఇస్ యువర్ అండర్స్టాండింగ్ ఆఫ్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ సోల్, that the soul is always bound with the body and it dies with the body. Tatapi, so tatapi still tvam na enam shochitum arhasi, still you should not be lamenting, o mahabaho, o mighty armed Arjuna. So he says even if you think that the soul, I think this is the Buddhist philosophy, I think the Buddhist philosophy is that the soul takes birth with the body and it dies with the body. Okay. So in one sense, it is almost like the body only. So they say that the soul is different from the body, but just like the body, it takes birth with the body and dies with the body. That is, let's see what philosophy is this. He says, I have presented to you the conclusive truth according to the scripture. Now I will present the truth according to material vision. Please understand it. So these are the deviant philosophies. Deviant philosophies regarding the soul and body. Right? Then he speaks this verse. If you think that the soul is always born when the body is born and always dies when the death of the body, with the death of the body, you should still not lament for it. Oh mighty armed Arjuna, being a brave Kshatriya, this war is your dharma. This is your dharma. You are a Mahabaho. Being devoid of the six changes such as birth, it is called as avikarya. As Bhagavatam says, Kshatriyanam ayam dharmaha prajapati vinirmitaha. Bhratapi bhrataram hanyat yena ghoratamastatah. Bhagavatam says, the code of sacred duty for warriors established by Lord Brahma enjoins that one may have to kill even his own brother. That indeed is the most dreadful law. So, even if you don't, if you don't accept that the soul is eternal, the soul is takes birth and it dies, then which means whether you kill or not, the soul will die. So therefore you should not lament your dharma. You should still execute your dharma, right? You should still execute your dharma. Why give up your dharma? Your dharma is to fight. So even if you don't believe in the eternal nature of the soul, if you think that the soul is temporary, it takes birth with the body and dies with the body, still there is no need for you to lament. You should execute your dharma of fighting on the battlefield. Okay. Any comments, discussion points on this point? Okay. If there is nothing, then we will continue. It's 9 o'clock. According to our what we had decided in the beginning, that at 9 o'clock, if there are any other questions not connected to the topic that we are discussing, we will take it till 9:30. But if there are no such discussion points, then we will continue with our Bhagavad Gita discussion till 9:30. So at this point, I will pause to see if there are any question. I mean, don't ask me, any question connected to our Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta or an application of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta or some so then we can have a discussion. But if there is none, then I will continue with our Bhagavad Gita. So I will pause for a few seconds to see if anyone is raising their hands. Anyone would like to ask any question? Okay. So then I will continue with our Bhagavad Gita discussion then. Okay. Next. Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityur dhruvam janma mrtasya cha tasmada parihariyarte natvam shochitu marhasi. Okay. That is the next question. That is the next point that he says. Jatasya hi mrityur dhruvaha. For what is born, death is certain. Mrtasya cha janma dhruvam. And for what is dead, birth is certain. Tasmat, therefore, apariharyarte, since both are unavoidable. Okay, when someone dies, he will take birth again. If he takes birth, he will definitely die. So birth and death are absolutely unavoidable. Natvam shochitum arhasi. So therefore, you should not lament, Arjuna. What is wrong with this philosophy? This is right, right? Whoever takes birth has to die. Whoever dies will definitely transmigrate to the next body, take birth again. So Krishna is telling, anyone who takes birth will die and anyone who dies will take birth again. So therefore, since birth and death are unavoidable, you should not lament. Is there any deviation in this philosophy? Is this a deviant philosophy or is this the right philosophy? What do you think? Anyone would like to answer? Anyone would like to answer? At least raise your hands and answer something so that I will know that you are still awake and there. So, okay, there is something in the chat box. Yes, very valid point. Okay, someone says it's a deviant philosophy. Why is it deviant? Why is it deviant? What is so deviant? Because this is, this we accept, right? This seems like according to Bhagavad Gita's teachings only. What is so deviant about it? I want devotees to try out. Is this deviant or is this right philosophy? This sounds quite all right, right? Is there anything deviant about this philosophy? Yeah, there are some people answering in the chat box, but don't look at the chat box. Anyone would like to try? Okay, I will say, not everyone who takes birth has to die, or not everyone who dies needs to take birth again. What about those who are fit for liberation? Janma karma chame divyam evam yo vetti tatvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mameti. So Arjuna, Krishna says, one who understands and realizes that the birth and activities of Krishna are eternal and transcendental does not, upon giving up his body, take birth again. So this argument that anyone who is born has to die and anyone who dies will definitely take birth, this is actually karma mima philosophy, karma vada. Yeah. So according to them, therefore, the best thing that you can do is to actually perform pious activities, because if you perform pious activities, anyway, rebirth is inevitable. At least you will get a very pleasant rebirth so that you can enjoy it. Otherwise, if you keep committing sinful activities, then you will get a very unpleasant birth and you will have to suffer. So this is karmavad. So this is not the right understanding. This is not the complete understanding. Not everyone who takes birth have to die and take birth again. That is not the correct understanding. This is not the complete understanding. This is the argument of the karma mimamsakas or the karmavadis, and this is not the complete understanding. Definitely this is not right. So he says that, my dear Arjuna, even if you accept this philosophy, then still your dharma is to fight, right? So anyway, if you have to anyway take birth, why not fight, perform your dharma, gain piety, and then get a favorable birth by in which you can enjoy? You are so much concerned about enjoyment while living and after in your next life. So if you actually fight on the battlefield and even die, then you will gain a lot of piety by which you will get a very favorable birth by which you can enjoy. So even if you accept this principle, or if you kill Bhishma or Drona on the battlefield because they are dying, they will anyway take birth again. But because they are allowing them, giving them an opportunity to die on the dharmic battlefield, therefore they will get a lot of piety and get a good birth, they will enjoy. Anyway, rebirth is inevitable. So Krishna says, even if you believe in this philosophy of karmavad, still you should not be lamenting, you should fight, Arjuna. That is what he says. So he says, since death is certain, right? Since death is certain with the depletion of karmas meant for this life, and birth is also certain because of the karma accrued by the body which has just died. Since both death and birth are unavoidable, do not live. Being devoid of the six changes such as birth, it is called as avikarya. Okay. So, any quick comments, discussion points on this verse? Anyone would like to share something? Okay, there is something in the chat box. Let's see. Why to cry over a bunch of chemicals? Someone may say this also. Also, they may say so many jivas are born and die every minute. Why lament on the death of the battlefield soldiers? You should lament in the sense that if they are connected to you, it is natural to lament. I mean, Krishna is telling you should not lament, but it is very natural to lament because because you will not have association. That's why Krishna says, Matra sparshas tu kaunteya shitoshna sukadukkata. This is a valid point, Arjuna. You will definitely not have their association. So therefore, lamenting is, you just tolerate it like that. Yes. Anyway, if there is no further discussion points, the purport you are giving is not from Bhagavad Gita. Is it right? Can you tell the source? I mean, we are discussing Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this. So if you have joined a little late, I think you are late. But for the last many months, we're discussing from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Okay. Shyamali Mataji.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Yes, ma'am.
I was just thinking that so many descriptions about the soul, like in a very shunyavad kind of way, is if Krishna is explaining he's going into so many depths to explain from a material point of view also. Isn't it easier to understand the relationship aspect and the colorful aspects of the soul also? Why is that not mentioned at all in the Bhagavad Gita? Like, it is said that, okay, this is the nursery level and that is PhD level, but isn't it the other way around? Isn't it easier to understand the relationship aspect than trying to understand this?
See, maybe for you. See, in the material world, you know, the qualifications are so external also, like you get a certificate and all that. But when a living entity is transmigrating from one body to another body, and in doing that, you know, he may be gaining some sukriti and all that. How do you quantify it? Right? So how do you quantify it? So therefore, for those who have that qualification to understand that colorful side of the soul, the positive relationship side of the soul, that is a very high level qualification. But that qualification is not in terms of studying and learning. That qualification is in terms of, you know, accumulating that Ajnata Sukriti. We are fortunate enough that we have gained that Sukriti and have gained access to digesting this knowledge. But not everyone falls within that category. For many people, both types of knowledge are difficult to digest, actually. And definitely Krishna is not you know, the kind of knowledge that he is presenting is very it's very foundational knowledge also, because otherwise, if we, without this basic understanding of the difference between body and soul, if we try to understand the other higher aspects, you know, we may think that we have understood, but that would be the biggest illusion. Actually, we cannot understand. So we may falter in basic things also, you know, like, you know, so therefore these are, it's not to confuse us. This is to make us actually be little bit reflective and start internalizing these things, that start thinking about how you are constantly acting on the bodily platform, and understand the nature of the soul and the body, and start internalizing these conclusions and start acting on the platform of the soul. So this is one aspect. And of course, for Vaishnavas, this is not our constant meditation. While we accept these conclusions as true, but this is not a part of our abhideya. This is not a part of our practice. We meditate on Jivera Swarubhoy Krishnera Nityada. We meditate on the fact that we are eternal servants of Krishna. That is what is our meditation. That is our sadhana. While we understand that we are not this body, we are the spirit souls, we do understand that, but that is not an active part of our sadhana. But still, it is essential knowledge to know. It is essential knowledge to reflect upon. Certainly, you know, you can, it's not that you have to stop your chanting and doing all those things to realize it and then only move ahead. It's not needed. Along with your chanting and hearing and all that, this knowledge will also be internalized, you know, without our knowledge, that we will internalize this thing also. Is that relevant? I don't know, Mataji.
Yes, thank you, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Let's then continue. this is actually Karmavad, as I discussed. I will just write it here. Or Karma Mimamsa. Okay. Avyaktadini Bhutani Vyakta Madhyani Bharata Avyakta Nidananyeva Tatraka Paridevana. So this is again, this is the another deviant philosophy. Avyakta Adini Bhutani. Okay. Living entities are invisible in the beginning. Okay, before creation or before their creation. Vyakta Madhyani Bharata. They are manifest only in the middle. Avyakta Nidananyeva. And then they are invisible at the end. Tatra ka paryevana. What is the need to lament for this? So, the argument that they have is that anything which has non-existence before, non-existence afterwards, but only existence for an intermittent short period, it's something very insubstantial to actually take very seriously. So he says that the living entities are invisible in the beginning, they are invisible later, only in a very short in between intermittent time they are visible. So therefore it is very insubstantial and it should not be taken very seriously. This is the argument, right? So this is also not true. Okay. They are considering the manifestation of the living entity to be the same as the body. The body and soul is the same. Okay. Thus, from the point of view of the soul having no birth and death, and from the point of view of the body for which birth and death are certain, the causes of lamentation have been eliminated. So this is the proper philosophy, right? In this verse, the Lord argues against lamentation using both ideas. Being eternal and having birth and death, but with purely materialistic argument. Okay. So, that's what he says this. So, being eternal and having certain birth and death, but with purely materialistic argument. So, he says that, okay, it did not exist before, it will not exist later. It is existing only in between. Then if it is not, then it is not so substantial, it is not worth lamenting for. That is their argument. So, so therefore, he says, devatas, human beings and animals are not visible before their birth. However, their subtle and gross bodies do exist invisibly in a potential form from the existence of causal ingredients such as earth. They become visible in the middle period and invisible after death. Even at the time of Mahapralaya, these bodies exist in a subtle form through the continued existence in subtle form of karmas and other elements. Thus, all living entities' bodies are invisible before birth and after death and are visible at intervals, only in the intervals. So therefore, what is the cause of... So this is stated by the personified Vedas in the Bhagavatam. Sthira chara jayata syur ajayota nimitta yujaha. O eternally liberated transcendental Lord, your material energy causes the various moving and non-moving species of life to appear by activating their material desires, but only when and if you sport with by briefly glancing at her. So, what he is telling is that before creation, then the living entities, their gross body and subtle body are in a very sushupti state. It is there, but it is not manifested. Okay. And then after annihilation also, again they go in a sushupti state. The gross body is there in a potential form, the subtle body is also there in a potential form. So he's telling that so what is the need for lamentation? Because gross body and subtle body, nothing actually goes away. Nothing is destroyed. It is just in an unmanifest form. And then it will manifest again. So what is the need for lamentation? That's what he is telling. So he says, even during Mahapralaya, these bodies exist in the subtle form through the continued existence. Through the continued existence in subtle form of karmas and other elements. So, they go and reside inside the body of Mahavishnu. So, the earth element of the body merges with the earth element, the universal earth element. The water element of the body merges with the universal water element. The air element of the body merges with the universal air element. And everything gets deposited within the body of Karanadaka Sai Vishnu. But it is all there. When the right time for manifestation comes, then they all come together and they form a gross body for that living entity. So that's what he says, that gross body or subtle body, it is always there. You know, it's initially in the unmanifest form. For a short duration, it is there in the manifest form. And then again, it becomes unmanifest. So there is no need for lamentation, because only for a very short duration in between, the gross body and subtle body come together in a manifest form and it comes in touch with the jiva. That is the argument that he is making. So even then you don't have to really lament, O Arjuna, like that he is indicating to Arjuna here. What cause is there for lamentation? Tatka paridevana. Like that. As Narada says, yan manyase dhruvam lokam adhruvam va nacha ubhayam sarvata nahi shochyaste snehad anyatra mohajat. So he says, O king, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle or the material body to be perishable or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute truth, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection and movement. He says that whether you accept a proper Vedic philosophy or you accept a non-Vedic philosophy, according to any of these philosophies, these emotions, these feelings of separations are due to illusion only and nothing more. So that is what here Krishna is also arguing, that everything avyakta dini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidananyeva tatraka paridevana. In the beginning, they were in an unmanifest state. In the end, they were in an unmanifest state. Only in the beginning, in the middle, for a short duration, they come together and in the form of a manifest form. So why do you have to lament for it? Like that. Okay, Shyamalaji.
Prabhuji, I was, because in yesterday's, or was it, no, yesterday's, the NOD class also, in the limbs of devotional service, this point is there about how one should not, as an active sadhana, one should take care of not going into the mode of lamentation.
Yeah.
Right? So I was just thinking here also, Krishna makes it, he's taking so much trouble to talk about lamentation should be avoided, lamentation should be avoided. Why is only lamentation, stressed on so much? I don't know. I was just thinking, because it's equally illusory to be in a very happy mode. And lamentation is also temporary. It comes, it goes. Right.
No, it seems like that. If out of joy, Arjuna would have declined to fight, then then he would have stressed that also. Actually, he stresses both. He stresses both. He stresses equanimity, actually, in joy and in lamentation. But because Arjuna, out of lamentation, is refusing to fight, the point of lamentation is again and again hit here by Krishna. If out of joy, if he would have refused to fight, then he would have, his narrative would have changed, actually. So, because so many symptoms of lamentation were presented. Gandivam shamsate hastat vakchaiva paridahyate. You know, all those symptoms that Arjuna was presenting, they were all symptoms of lamentation, intense lamentation. So therefore, he is telling, see, if you are crying, I have to give you various reasons and tell you, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. So if you are crying, then what, why should I tell you, you know, don't laugh, don't be so joyful. It makes no sense. Because here Arjuna is in a lamenting situation. Therefore, he is telling, don't lament. But at the same time, Krishna also in many of the verses of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, he does say, learn to be equipoised in distress and happiness. Sukha dukkha same kritva labha labhav jaya jayav. Like that many verses come. So he is not just criticizing, he is not being critical of just lamentation. He is critical of any extreme emotions. But because the extreme emotion that Arjuna is going through here is lamentation, therefore he is speaking on that lamentation. That's all.
And then what about, why is the point of lamentation so much stressed in, like no other, in the limbs of devotional service?
It's
not like a general principle that lamentation is like really wrong or like, I just wanted to know that. Is there any stress
It says shoka adibir bhavaya. Shoka adibir means shoka, etc. Shoka being the prominent one, but others also. So adi is etc. So it is not just a lamentation that is mentioned. It is any extreme emotion. That could be joy, that could be anxiety, that could be anything. But lamentation being a very prominent emotion, that is prominently mentioned. But otherwise, it's talking about all the other emotions also.
Yes, thank you, Prabhuji. That makes sense.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Okay. I think we are coming to an end. So we will end here and we will start with the 29th verse next week. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. So thank you very much. So again, we will meet next Friday for Bhagavad Gita. And the next Saturday, Sunday again, there will be no discussions. We will resume on Monday with our Brihad Bhagavata Amrita and Bhakti Sandarbha and Chaitanya Shiksha Amrita. Saturday, Sunday, we will have our japa sessions though. So for those of you who have been attending, you can continue to join. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.